Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with your host, executive editor of Newsbusters, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to Media Analyst Alley, where we're in a bit of a food coma this afternoon. Brett Bozell threw us a catered pre-Thanksgiving week lunch of turkey and all the fixings. All that was missing was a moment of silent reflection on the predations of European imperialism. MRC Culture captured that spirit from Grey's Anatomy on Thursday night. Dr. Grey's trapped in the airport in Minneapolis, can't make it home for Thanksgiving. And her adopted preteen daughter, Zola, cute black girl, says to mommy, "Thanksgiving isn't really a holiday we should celebrate. There's no actual evidence Native Americans were even invited to a feast. I think they cared more about being colonized and having their land stolen than mashed potatoes." Welcome to Critical Race Theory on ABC. The lead story today, breaking: Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty on all five counts. In that case, some breaking news is going to be a little embarrassing. Chuck Todd on MSNBC said, and now we turn to Jacob Blake's uncle. So-called Jacob Blake's uncle goes about speaking, saying racial justice has never been about tearing down communities. It's been about building communities. It's been about unity. This was a trial about a riot for racial justice. So maybe to a lot of racial justice people, burning stuff down is part of the practice, part of the activism. We need an uprising. And it ain't about unity. You know, the last thing they should try to bring us on MSNBC is the idea that anything's about unity when it comes to what they're doing. So Chuck Todd had to come on and say, whoop, sorry. Jacob Blake's uncle here was not Jacob Blake's uncle. We got some bad information. Well, there's a lot of bad information after the verdict, but I mean, mostly bad opinion. Chris Hayes is sort of the exception. He got in trouble with his followers after he tweeted, "Honestly, hope that kid takes the opportunity to turn his life around and tries to make the world a better place rather than pursuing the George Zimmerman life trajectory." So somehow Kyle Rittenhouse kills two white guys in self-defense, and it's like Trayvon Martin. But that's, you know, he got in trouble for saying that. Also, our Energizer bunny Curtis Houck tells me that Terry Moran on ABC in the live coverage actually expressed the thought that, you know, maybe we can resolve our differences without public disorder and shooting. I mean, well, yes. Wouldn't that be nice? This is what the news media should be all about. Generally, that's not what we're all about. Keith Olbermann, not really media anymore, but was a media star, is out there tweeting, "F this murderer. Thank you for your helpfulness, Keith." Then there was the Eugene Robinson, Washington Post columnist, was on NBC News. NBC seemed worse than MSNBC right after the verdict was read. He suggested there will be more deadly incidents like this because the Rittenhouse verdict was a vindication of vigilantism. You know, with the kid carrying a military-style assault weapon.
What concerns me, though, is that the result will be seen as a vindication of vigilantism, of what Kyle Rittenhouse was doing, the larger context of what he was doing, you know, during these demonstrations over the shooting of Jacob Blake. He came across state lines carrying a military-style assault weapon to protect property that he had nothing to do with on his property. There were police on the scene, you know, duly authorized and trained law enforcement officers who were prepared to handle whatever situation arose. Yet he came in, appointing himself as some sort of enforcer. And to the extent that this legitimizes that line of thinking, that line of action, I think it's very dangerous and it's very worrisome going forward.
It's interesting that terminology, you know, he was a self-appointed, you know, enforcer, as opposed to a self-appointed protester, rabble-rouser, burn-down-the-buildings guy. Is that self-appointed uprising specialist really a better person? I just don't like the word self-appointed in general. Who appointed Eugene Robinson to pronounce? I mean, pretty much everybody on television is self-appointed or appointed by the networks in which they appear. So to me, self-appointed is always sort of a weird adjective to use or a disparaging adjective. And somehow, you know, Rittenhouse came across state lines and that made it worse. Well, if you came across state lines from Illinois to burn down Kenosha, do you think Eugene Robinson would have anything to say about that? I kind of think not. Within about 5 minutes of the verdict, Joy Reid came to Twitter. She said, "We knew, but it's sometimes helpful to remind ourselves how America was designed to work. It continues to work as designed. We have learned again what is considered legal for some, asterisk, some, another asterisk, some people to do in America. It's helpful to know where you stand in your country. Be safe out there." Yes, where do we stand in our country, Joy Reid? Some in our country are black millionaires with nightly television shows. America really sucks for Joy Reid. As we know, as we wrote up, Joy Reid went on TikTok a few days ago and compared Kyle Rittenhouse to Brett Kavanaugh. She said,
"It reminded a lot of people of something. Something, I just can't remember what it was. Oh, the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, in which Brett Kavanaugh, who had been accused by a high school friend of committing sexual abuse of her, cried his way through the hearings to make him a permanent member and associate justice of the United States Supreme Court."
Yeah, that's wrong on several levels, journalist. One, Christine Blasey Ford was not a high school friend of Kavanaugh's. They never met. She couldn't figure out where they had ever met, so they were not friends. Second, he didn't cry his way through the hearings. He choked up during his opening statement. But it's Joy Reid, so who's counting on accuracy? She continued, "And his tears turned out to be more powerful than the tears of Christine Blasey Ford, which were the tears of an alleged victim." Yeah, alleged is, I mean, that's putting it mildly. And she went on to make fun of Kyle Rittenhouse for crying when he was describing actually shooting two people. But she continued, "But in America, there's a thing about both white vigilantism and white tears, particularly male white tears. Really white tears in general, because that's what Karens are, right? They Karen out, and as soon as they get caught, they bring waterworks. White men can get away with that too, and it has the same effect." I just kind of find that fascinating because she didn't accuse Hillary Clinton of a Karen out when Hillary Clinton cried on the campaign trail in New Hampshire in 2008. Hillary Clinton cried or choked up during a hearing on Benghazi in 2013. There was no cynicism about this was just a white tactic. A lot of people on Twitter are getting very tired of Joy Reid, constantly running down whiteness and the white people. Seems to me like she's kind of holding the Al Sharpton chair on weeknights. You know, they dismissed him from his nightly show, his nightly Politics Nation show, in part because he's a bumbling verbal machine. He's mildly embarrassing, and of course he can't help himself but to go to every, you know, racial controversy like an ambulance chaser. They weren't going to stop him from doing that, but they moved him to the weekends. Well, Joy Reid really has all the same reflexes and instincts as Al Sharpton. She's like Sharptonita. Now, at this point, everybody in the Twitter space is thinking about how maybe now Kyle Rittenhouse can sue for defamation. Nick Sandman suggested the other day that maybe he could try that. Obviously, the liberals are out there worrying that that Rittenhouse will be, you know, celebrated by the right wingers and get all kinds of money. You know, maybe he can write a memoir that will sell like hotcakes. It's, you know, to me, this is more sober and serious than that. I do think it's a moment to be sober and to hope that we can have less disorder. It would be really nice if we could have less disorder in the streets of Kenosha after this verdict. Too early to tell as we record. Jonathan Turley, the law professor, did tweet, "It is doubtful that a defamation lawsuit by Rittenhouse would be viable for calling him a murderer or a white supremacist. Putting aside the need for a verdict, a court would likely view him as a limited public figure and the commentary as protected opinion." That's kind of would have been my instinct. And that is that, you sort of become a public figure when you're on trial. I do think that the reaction to this certainly could be in the aftermath that this trial, considering all the evidence on video, and then what we heard from Mr. Grosskreutz about how he acknowledged that self-defense was what Rittenhouse was acting in. He had a gun pointed at him. Why a trial? Why was this trial necessary in the first place? So you had the news media and all the left-wing groups basically agitating the locals into a trial. And then when a jury looks at the evidence and goes, yeah, why are we here? Now, they took time. They took days, and that's good. I think if I was on the jury, I would want to take some time. You want people to know that you took it seriously. But why a trial? That would have been a nifty thing. That's what I would have wanted to say in the first 10 or 20 minutes after this verdict. What this verdict shows is that maybe there shouldn't have been a trial in the first place. I did want to throw in for Newsbusters today, P.J. Gladnick has a piece on Washington Post fact checker Glenn Kessler, who has written a long explainer article on the Steele dossier. I did sort of like his statement about how, now he's discovered that the Steele dossier has crappy sources. This is not really the take of Glenn Kessler 2 years ago when he wrote, "The dossier is a political Rorschach test. Depending on your perspective, it's either a hoax used to defame a future president or a credible guide to allegations about Trump's involvement with Russia." Yeah, no. Obviously, now what we have learned is it was a hoax devised by Democrats, funded by Democrats, using gossip coming from Democrats. But it was presented in real time in 2017 as very sober, serious evidence. They used sources like this, or quote-unquote evidence like this, to endlessly speculate on how the walls were closing in against Trump. I mean, Kessler acknowledges, "The dossier was eagerly described on cable news shows and referenced by Democrats in congressional hearings." Yes, cable news, Democrats, same thing. "The fact that the dossier's funding was traced to the Clinton campaign and that Steele had actively pitched the findings to news reporters gave Trump and his defenders an opening to try to discredit the Russia-related investigations as partisan-inspired witch hunts." Well, what were they? They were investigations by Democrats, and they were investigations by Robert Mueller, whose top prosecutors were all Democrats. Some of the prosecutors that Mueller hired had actually donated to the Democrats and to Hillary Clinton specifically. So you can maybe take exception to witch hunts, but you could definitely partisan and partisan inspired, that all fits. So, you know, the sad thing about all of this is, yes, Kessler's going to do some sort of serious analysis piece now, but there's no Pinocchios for Christopher Steele. There never were any Pinocchios for Christopher Steele, I don't believe. We are back with Kyle Drennan, associate editor of Newsbusters. We are still monitoring the Rittenhouse coverage, the wailing and gnashing of teeth. What have you been working on, Kyle?
This broke in the 1 o'clock hour, which meant Chuck Todd was on MSNBC. Initially some of the breaking news coverage of the verdict itself, Rittenhouse being found not guilty on all charges, was, somewhat balanced. It was somewhat reasonable. But then as the hour went on, it got more and more unhinged. And it basically ended with Chuck Todd and some of his guests talking about how, the country is now less safe because Rittenhouse was found not guilty because he was killed these two individuals in self-defense, and woe is us. This is terrible. The whole country's in danger now because of this verdict. I mean, that's sort of where they ended the hour.
I mean, I always think, one of the things I think about when I look at all this is to think of all of the crime that was committed in those days, and there, the people in Kenosha who lost their businesses and who, in some cases, lost pets in the rioting. I mean, and so many of the people who burnt that stuff down never went on trial. They weren't even found. The idea that somehow those things are not crimes. I mean, you just go back to Ali Velshi in front of the fire saying, "It's really not so bad.
It's really mostly peaceful, except for this inferno behind me." Okay. I mean,
it shouldn't be funny because that's, they have that, the left wingers have that horrible idea of, well, we can burn everything to the ground and you'll just get your insurance company to pay for it anyway, which doesn't end up being true.
Yeah, and there were riots all across the country. A lot of people died in a lot of different riots all across the country.
Right.
I mean, this is what happens when everything descends into chaos.
Now, on a somewhat related matter, we have the whole issue of critical race theory, and that is that NBC Nightly News has just had a real interest in one particular school district in Texas. Brian Stelter was very upset that Fox News was obsessed with Loudoun County in Virginia. NBC has been interested in this Dallas suburb of South Lake, Texas. And you reported the other day, we noted, I think Jeff Dickens noted earlier, that they'd done five stories adding up to more than 14 minutes on these school districts in Texas and one in Missouri that parents had the gall, the audacity to resist left-wing teaching methods. So I guess what you said was on Wednesday, NBC eagerly touted how the network's smear campaign had been rewarded because the Department of Education now has announced that it's launching multiple civil rights investigations into these schools in South Lake, Texas.
Texas schools in a firestorm over race, the new civil rights investigation. Tonight, there's developing news in South Lake, Texas, following the in-depth reporting NBC News has done there on the issue of race and education. A new federal investigation is now underway.
In South Lake, Texas, the U.S. Department of Education has launched three civil rights investigations at the Carroll School District over unspecified allegations of discrimination based on race, nationality, and gender. For almost a year, NBC News has covered the clash over race and education in this wealthy Dallas suburb. Volunteers spent almost 2 years developing a school diversity plan, but some parents pushed back, launching a lawsuit that effectively killed the plan. Experts say only 5 to 10% of these type of discrimination complaints become official federal investigations.
And that usually signals that they consider something potentially to be amiss. They're going to look into it more deeply and try to figure out if there have been violations of various federal laws.
The investigations could take well over a year. And if the federal government finds violations, the school district could be forced to make policy changes and could be monitored by the Department of Education for years to come.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds remarkably familiar. The National School Boards Association, sent a letter to the Biden administration saying, these parents speaking out at school board meetings are domestic terrorists. You better investigate them. And then what does the Biden administration do a few days later? The Justice Department says, we're going to investigate these parents and we're going to treat them like they're a bunch of criminals. And now here you have another left-wing interest group called NBC News.
Yeah.
And they are saying, forget all of of the controversy in Loudoun County or in any other school district across the country where conservatives are saying are standing up to left-wing school boards. In Southlake, Texas, you have a school board that isn't doing something left-wing, that isn't imposing CRT curriculum.
Or they're resisting
attempts. Or they're resisting attempts to do so. And so, no, forget all these other controversies. This is what we need to focus on as a news network. And the Biden administration, you know, this is good. Someone's listening to us at NBC, and they're investigating, and they're going after. They're going to bully this school district into submission. I mean, that's what happened here.
I just think it's we were sort of giggling here about how I think one of the local pot dispensary weeklies in Fort Worth was complaining about how, oh, they elected two conservative parents to the school board. It's like, yeah, democracy dies in darkness. When people get elected to the school board that are going to get in the way of the diversity and equity education. And this is where, but you have to laugh because you see these stories in Southlake, Texas, and you say, okay, MSNBC host Jonathan Capehart and everybody else, keep trying to say critical race theory isn't taught anywhere in America while you're championing critical race theory in Southlake, Texas.
Yeah, I mean that's what they're pushing for. They're upset that the school board there hasn't just, you know, folded under and gone along with it. And so therefore it needs to be a huge investigation. They have an entire podcast on for NBC News dedicated to going after this town. And now finally it's gotten enough attention where the Biden administration's like, "Oh, well, you know, NBC is telling us we better go investigate these people." So you know, it's like, who's in charge here? I guess NBC is.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, they order the Biden the Education Department to do something, and they do it. There's a tweet going around. Many conservatives were upset under the NBC News Twitter account with this tweet. Christina Wyman, : parents think they have the right to control teaching and learning because their children are the ones educated. It's sort of like entering a surgical unit thinking you can interfere with an operation because the patient is your child. And it's like, as somebody tweeted under this, if my child's going into surgery, I get to decide who the surgeon is, when the surgery happens, what the surgery is going to be. That's all that they're asking for here.
Right.
But this was a what they call it, the think page at NBCnews.com. I would just say, look, you're basically posting op-eds with these left-wing thoughts under the heading of NBC News. You're just setting yourself up. But the headline on this piece was, schools face parents who want to ban critical race theory, - and they don't get how teaching works. And then the subhead is, an educator's top goal is to teach students to think. Parents who dictate curricula with their personal opinions, ideologies, and biases hinder that goal. Oh, teachers aren't imposing their personal opinions, ideologies, and biases. That's exactly what's going on here. So, you know, we were talking about this earlier, you know, parents aren't qualified?
Yeah, I mean, that's an insane argument. I mean, first of all, a lot of parents homeschool their children. They get a license to do that. They get permission to do that. So the idea that, oh, well, parents can never, ever teach their children, it's like, well, In that case, they are teaching them, you know, a whole curriculum. But also, parents are the first teachers that children have.
Right.
So, I mean, just as children are educated by all sorts of role models in life, whether it's a teacher in a classroom, their parents at home, a coach on a soccer field, whatever it is. So that notion of you have to have, you know, the skills of a medical surgeon in order to simply educate a child is just ridiculous. It is absurd.
Yeah, I just think that the problem here is educators sort of have the same arrogance that journalists have, and that somehow society hinges on their reasoning abilities and that parents shouldn't be getting in the way. Just the way that they would say, hey, who's these newsbusters trying to tell journalists how to operate? You know, Who qualified you? Well, I have a degree in mass communication here, pal. I got as much right to say as you do.
Right, and it's also it is a straw man argument because, again, it's not like I said this earlier to you. It's not like parents are storming into a classroom, shoving the teacher aside, and saying, "Okay, kids, I'm teaching today." I mean, like, that's not what anyone's asking for. That's not what's going on. It's parents want input over what's going on in a school, in the classroom. You know, they simply want to be in the conversation and aware of what's going on and to have a say. Very, very reasonable. And right, and they're trying to turn it into, you know, this idea that, you know, parents are taking over, you know, storming into classrooms or something. It's just, yeah, it's ridiculous.
I think that you know, when I was growing up, I mean, my parents trusted the public schools, but they are public schools. They're more accountable, you would think, than private schools. Although I think private school administrators are probably going to pay more attention to parents because parents are handing them money.
Yeah.
Public school teachers are more arrogant. They think, well, you know, you're indirect. You're not really funding us. The government's funding us. So you're not really our customers. Mm-hmm. We don't have to care what you think. But, right. You know, I don't know about you. I wasn't taught critical race theory. I was taught what you might consider the skeptical view of how America wasn't always great. That we got that. We learned about slavery.
Sure.
We learned about Jim Crow. We talked about all of that.
Yep,
we had
Absolutely. Roots
on the television. That's what one of the things that really bothers me, that whole idea that they're going to pretend like you're against teaching our real history. It's like, no, we're against teaching your fake history, the Nicole Hannah Jones version of history.
History is the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's an objective set of facts of here's what happened. That's what history is. So, yeah, again, it's going to be good, positive stuff. It's going to be negative stuff. It's going to be everything in between. But it's not, you're not trying to push an ideology. You're not trying to say, well, you know, America is just this horrible, evil, inherently racist place. And, you know, it's the whole system is designed that way. I mean, this is what critical race theory wants to teach. It's like, that's not history. That's not, you're just making a left-wing political point. You're not trying to teach people about things that happened in the past and you know, a timeline.
I think Scott Whitlock would complain that history teachers really don't teach enough about President Grant, President Rutherford B. Hayes, President Chester Arthur, and all of the ones that he's expert in.
Right.
James Garfield. And what were those surgeons doing to James Garfield? But they kept putting their dirty hands in his gut, and then he died. Anyway.
Those were people with medical degrees, weren't they?
Yeah. Don't think his mom was, his mom wasn't there to tell the surgeons to knock it off. Anyway, but, you know, history is one of those things that people fight over. And we're here when the media says it's the first draft of history. We're going to say often the first draft of history isn't so hot. And it takes time for things to settle in. Speaking of people who are a sort of history, you wrote on Tuesday on the show, the badly named show, CBS Mornings.
Yes.
They had a nearly 10-minute segment with Al Franken. Tony DeCoppola said he is back on stage on tour as a comedian nearly 4 years after resigning from office. And this whole thing was basically a sob session where they talked about how Nate Burleson, the former wide receiver for the Seahawks, talk about people who don't have a qualification to do what they're doing. I'm sorry. I don't think Nate Burleson has a journalism degree, Kyle.
He's sitting next to a very qualified journalist named Gail King.
He is just as qualified as other former NFL players who are morning hosts. You know, and that's not to say they're bad at it. It's just to say don't get huffy about all your degrees. Nate Burleson asked Al Franken, I want to get your thoughts on cancel culture. Do you believe that you were canceled? And then Gail King, Democrat donor, keeps harassing him about whether he's going to run again.
Yeah, no, it's she was, when are you going to get back into politics? Are you going to get back into politics? And Franken, you know, sort of eventually says, oh, well, I'm open to it. And then and then they go on in the discussion and they're talking about, Gail asks, oh, aren't you worried about our country? And of course, it opens Franken to go on and bash Republicans for, for a few minutes. And then after that, she comes back to, you know, this is why you really need to be as part of the official conversation, meaning be in office, be, you know, running for something. It was basically just he's got Gail's endorsement. He'll probably get a check from her, you know, if he decides to run. She's got that history.
Yes.
So, but yeah, the whole segment, it was a 10 minute segment.
It
was like a 60 Minutes profile on CBS Mornings. And it was all designed to rehab Al Franken, who resigned in disgrace after multiple women came forward with sexual harassment accusations. And it's, you know, CBS is like, okay, you've been gone a few years. We want to promote your comedy show and urge you to run for office again.
Yeah, it doesn't matter that, you know, yes, we all remember the infamous photo of him fake honking the chest of a woman who was asleep. Yep. He thought that was hilarious. Now, we can all imagine if there was a photo of Donald Trump doing exactly the same thing, they would want him impeached. So, I mean, it's funny. Obviously, Kyle, you know where I'm going. I'm always thinking, what next? Charlie Rose! Isn't it time for Charlie Rose to try again?
Yeah, no.
Never seen a grown man naked.
Oh, jeez. It's and Gayle King, of course, once said, you know, when they were, the whole Charlie Rose thing happened right around the exact same time as Al Franken's scandal, by the way. And after covering that for a few months, the Charlie Rose story, Gayle King one day just declared, you know, on CBS, oh, I'm sick of having to talk about Charlie Rose all the time. So, you know, it's you know, now she wants to help rehab Al Franken. So.
Well, that to me is, it again, makes Me Too seem awfully insincere. When you get to this point where you're like, well, he's done his time or whatever, and now let's put him back in the Senate.
Well, yeah, and actually on that point, CBS has this history. Initially, they embraced cancel culture. They went after the Washington Redskins, now the Washington football team. They've gone after others, you know, initially when cancel culture really started revving up. So they were happy with it, and then it started turning on liberals. It started turning on people they liked. Mm-hmm. And so then they started doing segments where they were sort of saying, isn't this cancel culture? Isn't this getting out of hand? Because look at this left-wing person that we're friends with who's being impacted by it. And so this is now all of a sudden it's turning on people they like. So it needs to be shut down.
Well, I went into the CBS Mornings topic page on Newsbusters just to try to recall how they've been doing interviews recently. And of course, Al Franken got a much easier time than Huma Abedin.
Oh, yes.
They were all mad because she caused Hillary to lose. And then the day before that, Senator Pat Toomey was on, and yeah, Pat Toomey didn't get the Al Franken treatment. He got the third degree.
Yep.
Where he was fighting with Elizabeth Warren's stand-in, Tony DeCoppola, about raising the debt ceiling. I think you have certainly noticed this over the years, is that whenever they actually have a Republican politician on the CBS Morning Show, it is the third degree. And a lot of times what was it they did with? Did they get out the pie for Elizabeth Warren, or was that a different segment? Where
it was a few days before Tony DeCoppola went to a mall with pies and was trying to sell socialism with pies, saying like, oh, if you know, if I give this person a big slice of pie, you're only going to get these few crumbs, and you know, equating that to the economic system. And then a couple of days later, Elizabeth Warren, they do this softball puff piece with Elizabeth Warren, and she specifically goes back and cites that report from a few days earlier and says, that was a great segment. That was fantastic. You guys got it exactly right. So, I mean, it's like, you know, oh, okay. It's Elizabeth Warren is endorsing their selling of socialism. I mean, that's
here in the House, Tony DeCoppola. If you aren't familiar with Tony DeCoppola, he's married to Katie Turr, the MSNBC host. But I think of Tony DeCoppola as Captain Pies. I always think of him hawking pies and socialism. But that actually is the kind of stuff that did happen to me in my I guess it was, I don't know if it was a history or poli sci class, where they did this sort of exercise like, all right, I got a bowl of poker chips and this guy gets 37 and you get 2. Now, are you mad? Like, this is somehow illustrative of how society works. So,
right.
Luckily, I was in high school and I was all over that. I didn't mean my dad to come to the school board meeting. I'm like, excuse me, Mr. York. This is not real.
I would just tell Tony DeCopel, we can bake more pies. It's not one. There's not one pie, Tony.
This is true. You can go to McDonald's and get pies. They don't come in slices.
That's right.
They're like just a big, hot, molten bar. Anyway, we will be back. We're going to have Thanksgiving week. We had Thanksgiving lunch today, but we'll be back next week and eating leftovers. So come on by. Come to Newsbusters once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.